Well, it's what comforts us when we're in our areas of despair. It's what lifts the load of guilt when we're conscience-stricken. It's what gives us strength to bear our daily burdens and lifts us up when we're fallen. It's what brings us all together at the very foot of the throne of grace from various parts of the world. And it's what brings our spiritual world, the spiritual world in heaven, into view. And it's the Word that in a way conquers God, that is, moves God to do things that God might not have done had you not used this Word. And that Word is prayer. We talked about that last time. We talked about the two parables that Jesus gave. And Jesus said, of course, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. Now, you can't just be a wicked person, because the wicked, God doesn't hear the wicked. You remember Proverbs 15, verse 29? It says, the eternal is far from the wicked, but he hears the prayer of the righteous. The eternal is far from the wicked, but he does hear the prayer of the righteous. So you can't just be wicked. We're not talking about just anybody can do this. You have to be sincere. You have to be fervent. You have to be right. And your cause has to be right. In the book of Isaiah, chapter 66, and verse 2, and verse 1, it talks about, you know, God has made all these things. Well, where's the footstool you'll make for me? Because, you know, heaven's my throne, the earth is my footstool, and so on. And he goes on, and where's the house you're going to make for me? And then in verse 2, he says, for my hand made all these things. I made it all. Thus all these things came into being, declares the Eternal. But to this one I will look, to him who is humble and contrite of spirit, and who trembles at my word. Humble, contrite of spirit. So here you have factors that go along with this. Not just saying, you can't take an evil person and say, well, he can demand of God, and he can go up and ask and move God and conquer God through prayer. No, his heart has to be right. This is what we know. And we're talking about times in someone's life. I want you to see this particular event. It's in the book of Isaiah. It's also in the book of 2 Kings, but I want to read from Isaiah chapter 38. I want to begin in verse 1. This is the famous story of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was a great king, a righteous king. But notice in chapter 38 of the book of Isaiah, in those days, Hezekiah became mortally ill. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. And Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amos, the famous Isaiah, the one who wrote the book of Isaiah, Isaiah the prophet came to him and said to him, thus says the Eternal. This is what Yahweh says to you. Set your home in order, your house. Set your house in order, for you shall die and not live. Now he's sick. He's very sick. He's sick unto death. And God says, this is the thus says the Eternal. Now think about this. How many people, if God said to you, you're going to die, well, that's it. Okay, I accept it. I'm going to die. I take it because here's a thus says the Eternal. Can you change the thus says the Eternal? Well, most people say no. I mean, I'm sick already. God is giving me the word. I'm going to die. What can I do about it? I'm going to die. That's it. But not Hezekiah. Then Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and prayed to the Eternal. Now, I'm going to come before the judge of the universe. I'm telling you that we've made prayer into something that is not, you know, that we've reduced its power. And He comes before the judge, the great grantor of all gifts of the whole universe, and he prays like this. He said, "Remember now, O Yahweh, O Eternal, I beseech you, remember how I have walked before you in truth and with a whole heart and have done what is good in your sight." There was no doubt about it. He was a great king. He was a good king. He led Israel. He got him to throw away all this junk stuff and say, "Oh, come away from idolatry, get away from the Asherah and all that stuff and the pagan worship symbols and stop the sacrifices, burning children into the fire and all that and sacrificing children to Molech and all that." He got rid of all that. Here he was. And now he says, "You know, I've done it. I've done what was right." And look at verse 3, the last part. "And Hezekiah wept bitterly." Hezekiah wept bitterly. Now, when you see someone and they are crying, and they are crying until you ever cry so hard that your gut hurts you. You cry inside and your gut almost hurts you. You're crying so hard. He wept bitterly. And what is that a sign of? Total sincerity, total, absolutely, you know, this is very meaningful to him. He's overcome with his emotion. He wept bitterly. Then the word of the Eternal came to Isaiah. Now, according to 2 Kings, Isaiah is on his way out. Isaiah delivers the message. "Here you are, Hezekiah, this is what's going to happen to you. The Eternal, thus says the Eternal, you shall die and not live." Okay, I've done my job, you know, get your house in order. Just, you know, make sure whatever you want donated to who and who's going to succeed you and all that. And get it ready. And goodbye, you know, and Isaiah is on his way out. He's done his job, he's delivered it. And as he's going out, the word of the Eternal comes to him. And here it is. "The word of the Eternal came to Isaiah saying, 'Go back.'" In other words, "Go and say to Hezekiah, 'Thus says the Eternal, the God of your fathers, the God of your father David, I have heard your prayer.'" See, God is a God hearing prayer. He is a hearer of prayer. "I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears." It didn't go without. It didn't go for naught. God knew it. "I have heard your prayer. I have seen your tears." This is Isaiah chapter 38, dropping down to verse 5. "I have seen your tears. Behold, I will add 15 years to your life." Wow. I thought I was going to die. And somebody's going to give me 15 more years. Now, I don't know about you, but suppose someone said to you and asked you, "You have 15 more years to live in good health, and then you're going to die." Would you take that offer if somebody said you can have 15 more years from right now in good health? You will not have any sickness. You'll do well. You'll feel good. And but after the end of 15 years, you will die. I'm going to ask you a question. Would you take that offer? Now, you don't have to raise your hand for me, but think about it. But think about that. And think about, I can count on it. I can count. I'm going to live 15 more years for certain, because the word of God said I will live 15 more years for certain, and I will not die. So I will add 15 years. I will add it to your life. I will deliver you. Not only that, I'll deliver you and this city from the hand of the king of Assyria. You know, the building up of the powers up of the north. The king of Assyria was coming on strong. That was before Babylon even. And I will come on. I'm going to deliver you from the king of Assyria, who wants to pick a fight with everybody. I will defend this city. Okay? You won't even have to worry about it. And in the book of 2 Kings, Hezekiah is the one that asks. He said, well, what sign will the Eternal give me that this will happen? And Isaiah said, well, he's going to have you, the shadow coming down the stairs. It'll move faster. It'll go down the stairs further. And Hezekiah said, well, it's already going to move. It's on its way moving down. That's just the normal path of the sun. How about if you make the shadow go backward? Back the other way. Then I'll know it's a real sign. How can I count on 15 years? How do I know this? And here's what he said. Verse 7, this shall be the sign to you from the Eternal, that the Eternal will do this thing that he has spoken. Behold, I will cause the shadow on the stairway, which has gone down with the sun on the stairway of Ahaz, I will cause it to go back up 10 steps, going 10 steps. So the sun's shadow went back 10 steps on the stairway on which it had gone down. There's the miracle. Give me a miracle. Here's the miracle that I'll know I'm going to live for 15 more years. Now, I can tell you this. If God said to most people, thus says the Eternal, you're going to die, what would most people do? That's it for me. Okay, that's God's will. Most people would not think in terms of, I'm going to go to God, and I'm going to pray, I'm going to ask, because I want this. I want to live for just a more, I want to live more. I've done a good job. I've got more purpose. I've got more life in me. I want to extend my life. I can do that. I'm going to turn to God, and I'm going to ask God. I'm going to say, God, I've done a good job. I've served you. I've done well. Please. And he wept bitterly. I don't want to die right now. And in the book of 2 Kings, they applied a poultice of figs and so on to him. And you see that. But God, thus says the Eternal, changed his mind. Thus says the Eternal became another reversal. Thus says the Eternal, we're going to do this. Now think about that. That is incredible. And what did that? What changed God? What in a sense conquers God? The prayer of the righteous. The prayer of the righteous. I petition God. As I said before, I have a client who desperately would love to come before the judge on an ex parte and talk to the judge personally about her case. Hard to do that. You and I have a chance to talk to the judge of the universe, ex parte, and to talk to him about things even, and sometimes you have to be content with an answer. Sometimes God gives an answer. Paul said, I sought the Eternal. I sought God three times for this. I sought the Lord. And I said, take this thing away. And the Lord finally said to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. That's it. That my strength is made perfect in your weakness, Paul. Sometimes God wants us to be weak because in weakness we show the humility and whatever, and we show God's power. Sometimes that's the case. You have to be content when God gives you an answer or God doesn't answer at all. Now, you remember the parables. The parables that Jesus gave. We talked about that last time. We talked about these wonderful parables that Jesus gave. The parable of the midnight visitor. You remember the midnight visitor comes? Oh, hey, guys, you guys coming to me at midnight? I don't have any bread. I'll go over to my friend's house and see if I can get bread. Hey, knock, knock, it's midnight. Can you please give me some bread? And he says, I'm already in bed, man. It's midnight. You don't come to somebody's house at midnight, do you, and ask for bread? And he's knocking. And Jesus said, I tell you that though he would not get up and give him bread because he's his friend. In other words, the friendship was not the motivating factor that got him out of bed. What the motivating factor was that he would not go away. He was impudent. He was insistent at what he wanted. Then we had the other parable Jesus gave of the widow seeking for the unjust judge, the unrighteous judge. The widow who seeks protection, civil protection, legal protection. She goes to the judge, and the judge says, you know, though I don't fear any man, I don't fear any God, I don't care about any of that, but if I don't give this widow what she wants, she's just going to keep after me and wear me down. You remember those two parables? We talked about those last time. Well, it seems like this particular situation captures both of them. It captures both of these parables in this one event. And I'm going to read it from, it's in both Mark chapter 7 and in Matthew chapter 15. I'm going to read it from Matthew's gospel, but we'll go back to Mark's periodically. But let's take a look at this. I want to read it through. I want you to understand it. Jesus went away from there and withdrew into the district of Tyre and Sidon. He did not want to be seen. You'll see this from Mark's gospel. I'll read from Mark's gospel, chapter 7. I'm going to switch back and forth to you since I don't have... Jesus got up and he went away from there to the regions of Tyre and Sidon, where he entered into a house. Okay, he entered into a house eventually to know... And so he wanted no one to know he was going there. Evidently, he needed a rest. He was going to a place where he just didn't want to be bothered. But he could not escape notice. People knew about him, and people noticed him. And after hearing of him, in verse 25 of the book of Mark, chapter 7, Mark 7, after hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter, I guess she had an only child, she had her only daughter, and a woman who had a daughter who had an unclean spirit immediately came and fell at his feet. Now, evidently, he was out on the street first, you know. When he was out first on the street, she noticed him. Somebody said, hey, this healer, this magnificent healer, that has healed all kinds of people. He's come to town. He's come to us. Now, guess what? Where was this? This was up on the shores of Tyre and Sidon. Those two cities. Tyre had already been destroyed. You remember? Nebuchadnezzar did it. And Alexander the Great did it. And they just, you know, they wiped it out. But it's up there on the shores of the Mediterranean. Beautiful little area. It's very nice. It was a great city, great place for a city. And there it is. And so here was Jesus. He comes there during this time. And he didn't want anybody to notice, but they already noticed it. So this woman, you know, she says, you know, I've got this daughter. My daughter's just being, you think he could help? I've heard of him. I believe him. And, you know, they say, well, yeah, you know, and she starts to believe. But she's impelled. I have a daughter, the only daughter, who's suffering and suffering and suffering. I've got to see him. I'm sure people would say, you know, he's a Jew, you know. He's a Jew. What are you? You're a Canaanite, a Syrophoenician. You're a Syrian. You're a Gentile. You're a Greek. The Greek, it uses all these words for her. Because this area was originally in the Phoenician, Syrophoenician area. It was also a part of Canaan, the land of Canaan. So she's called a Canaanite. She's called a Syrophoenician. She's called a Greek, a Gentile. She's Greek. And so she says, you think he'll listen to me? You think, oh, you know, I don't know. He probably won't. He probably will. He probably won't. I don't know. And you know what? He's always got those disciples. Those disciples kind of protect him. They don't let just anybody come up to him, you know? So I don't know what your chances are. But out on the street, the Bible says, after hearing of him, you know, after hearing of him, what does she do? She comes up and immediately she came and fell at his feet. Okay, now the woman was a Gentile, that says the Greek, of the Syrophoenician race, according to Mark's gospel, verse 26. And she kept asking him, I want you to notice the word, she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. Hey, you know, my daughter's being plagued with this evil spirit. Could you please cast this demon out? Now, in the book of Matthew, it says, and a Canaanite woman. Yeah, because that was the land of the Canaan. All of these are proper titles for her. A Canaanite woman from the region came out and began to cry out, "Have mercy on me, Lord, Son of David." Now, all of a sudden, she knows a little bit about the Jewish religion and the way that it would come down to the Messiah. "My Lord, Son of David, my daughter is cruelly demon-possessed." So she's asking time and again. Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15, verse 23 says, "He did not answer her a word." Now, let me tell you how it is. Do you ever call somebody and you ask them, and they don't call you back? They don't answer? What do you get? What idea do you get if you're talking and somebody won't answer you? Most people say, "He doesn't want to be bothered. He doesn't want to be bothered with me. I'm talking to him. He doesn't answer. Doesn't want to be bothered." Most people take that as a social sign, if you read social things, that, better go on your way. I mean, I asked and, you know. She could have gone back to friends and said, "Well, what happened?" "Well, I asked him." "Well, what did he say?" "He didn't answer me. He never even answered. Never looked my way. Never answered me." "Well, what did you do?" I said, "Well, you know, he's going to answer me. I'm out of here, I guess. I mean, I don't know. He doesn't want to be bothered with me. So I picked up and decided to leave." That's what most people would do. Isn't that right? But what was this woman impelled by? The love of her daughter. Her daughter is suffering. Here is a man that she believes now has the power. And she calls him, "Lord, have mercy on me, you Son of David. I know you're in the Messianic line. Please have mercy on me. My daughter, just cast that demon out, because she's being cruelly, you know, tortured and hurt by this demon." And he won't answer. Now, don't ask me to explain why he didn't answer, okay? Because I don't know. The Bible doesn't say why. It doesn't put us in Jesus' mind. It doesn't say anything. It just says he didn't answer. And in Mark's gospel, she kept asking. She asked again and again. He didn't answer. Total silence. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. We could guess. We could speculate. Maybe he wanted it to show how sincere she was, how definite she was, how much she wanted it. Maybe he also wanted to show this story the way it is in the Bible for us. But he didn't answer her anything. Okay? Did not answer her word. And finally, his disciples came and implored him. I mean, put the pressure on him, saying, "Tell her to get out of here. Send her away, because she keeps shouting at us." I mean, we're not going to be able to talk to anybody here. Now, they may have gone inside the house by now. There's a house there. And first they're on the street, then they go in the house. "Tell her to get out of here. You know, we're not going to be able to carry on a conversation with anybody. Her keep yelling at you. She's asking you 3 or 4 or 5 times, 'Lord, help me, you know, do this. You know, my daughter's cruelly blamed. Lord, can you do this?'" And so on. And she doesn't anything. And he answered, verse 24, but he didn't answer her. Who do you think in Matthew chapter 15, verse 24, he's talking to? He's talking to his disciples. They're asking him, "Tell her to get out of here." And he answered and said, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." You know where I'm supposed to go. I'm not supposed to be sent to, you know, Gentile world. I'm sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Now, she overheard that. He's talking to his disciples. He's not talking to her. Right now, he hasn't said a word to her. She's still there. She's asking. Let's take a look at Mark's gospel. And the woman was a Syrophoenician race. She kept asking him to cast the demon out. And He was saying, let the children first be satisfied. So they abbreviate this here, and that's not good. Let's come to that. We'll come to that in a minute. All right, so first, he says, I'm not sent to the lost sheep. And she heard it. And finally, she moves away from her original request, and she shortens the request now to a desperate statement. Lord, help me. Verse 25. Help me. Now she's hurting. Now she's desperate. Okay? Now when you heard, first of all, you're ignored. Nobody answers you. Second, you hear the disciples saying, send her away. Which tell her to get out of here. She's going to interrupt us. He says, well, you know my commission. I was never sent to anybody but the lost sheep of the house of Israel, meaning the people there, you know, and to help the people of Israel to come to Christ. And he says, I wasn't sent to anybody but the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I'm not supposed to go to the Gentile world. And finally, she hears that, but she comes up and she says, Lord, she falls down, bows down before him, worships him, according to the King James. But it's a form of worship. He bows down before him and she says, Lord, help me. And then he answers. Here's the proverb. This is probably a kind of a proverb that was in that day, you know. He says, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. Now, the word dogs here has been sort of misunderstood. There, in the Middle East, dogs is an epithet. It's a very bad word to say to people, you're a dog. Okay, my grandfather came over to this country years ago, and two people were meeting his friends, and one of them said, hi, Joe, you old dog. And my grandfather stepped back. He thought there's going to be a fight. Oh, they're going to fight. And the other guy said, nothing. He said, how come he didn't hit him? My grandfather was, how come he didn't hit him? How come he didn't punch him? Because that would be a dirty word in the Middle East to call something. But this particular Greek word is not properly translated by almost any translation, but one or two do. One or two do. They get it. This Greek word means a little dog, a lap dog, a small little dog, a house dog, one that you keep in around the house, like a Corky, you know, or, you know, one of these little miniature poodles or something. It's really a lap dog, a dog that you keep on your lap or walks around. And he says, It's not fit. It's not the right thing. It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little lap dog there, on the, you know, the ones on the floor there, the ones running around the table. Okay, that's what he's saying. It's evidently a proverb. And she knew it. She evidently heard that before, and she comes back. Okay, let's read Mark's gospel. Mark's gospel. He says, "Let the children be satisfied first. It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the lap dog, to the little dog, you know, to your small dog." And she answered and she said, yes, Lord. They're right. That proverb's right. It isn't. But even the dogs under the table, that's where they, you know, little dogs sit around, feed on the children's crumbs. And at that, she conquered Jesus. That statement broke him down. That statement got her what she wanted. And he said, verse 28 of Matthew 15, Jesus said, oh woman, your faith is great. He's stunned. He is stunned. He's moved. Oh, woman. And by the way, woman is a very polite means, yeah, madam, lady. It's a very polite form. It's not, oh, woman. You know, it's not like we do. It's a very polite form. It's madam, Mrs., your faith is great. great. He's stunned. He's stunned. And she gets what she wants. He says, "It shall be done for you as you wish." You're going to get what you want. You stayed with it. You didn't give up. And because of her love for her daughter, she wasn't going to back off. She wanted it. She wanted what she wanted for her girl. And she wasn't going to change her mind. "And you're not going to insult me. And you're not going to make me feel bad. And you're not going to push me away. And I'm going to keep asking for help." And you know, a lot of times it's easier to ask for help from someone else, and it's a noble thing to ask for someone else. And going back to her house, he says, you know, "Because of this answer, go." In Mark's gospel, "Because you gave me this answer." Matthew says, "Oh, woman, your faith is great. You gave me this answer. Go. The demon is gone out of your daughter." Matthew's gospel says, "Your faith is great. It shall be done to you as you wish." And her daughter was healed at once. And Mark's gospel says, "When she got back home, she found her daughter lying on the bed, the demon having left." She got what she wanted. She would not. She, that prayer, changed Jesus Christ. She got it, okay? She got it, and she wasn't giving up. And she is immortal in the pages of the Scripture. 2,000 years, that's been in the Gospels. People in the 4th century were reading this. People in the 12th century were reading this. People in the 17th century were reading this. That woman's story is embedded in the Scriptures in 2 gospel accounts because she wouldn't give up. She, in effect, conquered, in a sense. I don't use the word conquered. I don't mean beat up on. I don't mean ruled over. I mean she got Jesus Christ to change and to give her what she wanted. Yes, God is a prayer-hearing God and a prayer-answering God. And when you get a chance to go on your knees before the throne of grace and to talk to the judge of the universe, ex parte, just you and the judge alone to present your case. Wow. You talk about it. Jesus did give us a couple of things. Things that we should pray on a regular basis. But one of these things is this. Thy will be done. Thy will be done. I want this. I want this. I want this. It has to be within your will, but I want it. I want it for so-and-so. I want it for somebody else. I'm praying for them, and I'm praying hard, and I'm praying directly. In Hezekiah's case, it was for himself. I'm going to present my case. I've served you. Weep bitterly. Please, I've served you. Please extend my life. And God did, 15 years. And Jacob held on. I won't let you go till you bless me. And Abraham prayed for Sodom. How about just 10? Would you take 10? Would you save the city for 10? And God said, okay, I'll save the city if there are 10 righteous. But there weren't, you know. That's why he destroyed the city. There weren't even 10. You come to the judge of the universe. He is the righteous judge. He will hear your prayers. You will listen. You will hear. You will know eventually whether you get your will and you have to be satisfied with his will. But you keep coming. Now, Paul kept coming, and Paul had a special revelation come to him and say, my grace is sufficient. That's all you're going to get. You're not going to get this healed. You're not going to get this thorn in the flesh taken away from you. That's it. Prayer. Let's not make it into some, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And bless so and so and so and so. Let's make it what it really is. Our one-on-one petition to the judge of the universe.